This was not a forced entry. Paul had given me the key. We went inside and witnessed a small orb burn a hole through one wall to enter another room. When we returned a few weeks later, the burn hole was still there. Paul was actually photographing extraterrestrials. I don't remember how many, but he had a whole group of pictures. He had a Canon 35mm, and I told him, if you ever take any pictures of UFOs, don't develop them, let us do it. One day he called me and said he had a whole roll of photographs of these UFOs that he took over the base. So I went out, picked them up, took them over to our secure photo lab and gave them to one of our developers to process. An hour later he comes out with the photos and says, what the hell are these things? Albuquerque International Airport shares a landing field with Kirtland Air Force Base. The photos showed oval-shaped crafts flying above the planes that were landing. So these commercial planes were coming in while these ET craft would fly right over top of them and then veer off. We had the images enlarged. The craft were structured and seamless and as big as the Corona craft. A blue trail was coming out of the bottom of the craft, probably the energy device. We sent the photos to headquarters. I don't know whatever happened to them. I became friends with Paul. He eventually went crazy and he died some years later. One time, we had a video brought to the base by a guy who lived in Placitas, which is north of Albuquerque in the mountains. He was retired Air Force, I believe he was a pilot. He lived in a remote area, deer would come up to his backyard where he had a video camera set up. He was an amateur wildlife photographer. One night he heard a noise and went out and this craft was hovering right over his backyard. And he took video of that. It was about 28 seconds or something like that before the craft took off. We took the video and the camera and sent it to the Air Force Office of Special Investigation Headquarters at Bowling Air Force Base, and they would send it to the NSA. They sent him a check to cover the cost of the camera, they classified the video and he never got it back. Years later, after I retired, I joined a close-knit group of former intelligence officers. We'd get together every year for reunions. Some of these intel guys were dire. Quite a few members of our group were former CIA. They didn't do any field work because the CIA couldn't do that. But they were relying on a lot of information that we were feeding them, and they were doing analytical studies of what they had. The FBI, of course, was involved in it. The most convincing case that I've ever been involved with has never, ever been made public, and that was the incident up in Utah. Years ago there was a guy that lived in a remote trailer just outside of Bagua Proving Grounds. He had worked in the army as a photographer. After he got out of the army he went and worked for Bagua Proving Grounds as a photographer. He was never married, he was an orphan. He lived by himself in this single wide 14 by 80 foot trailer. He had built some sheds and stuff around it. OC Hill Air Force Base called me in late 1984 or early 1985 and said, we got this guy that lives in this remote area by Dugway that sent us all these photographs of UFOs. And we don't really have an IQ up here that can talk intelligently to this guy. Parenthesis, an IQ is an OSI designation for somebody that investigates UFOs. I went up there and visited this guy. He had a lot of common sense, but was not well educated, having left school in the 8th or 9th grade. But there wasn't anything he didn't know about cameras or photography. For years he took pictures of things out at Dugway. He showed us a book of all these photographs, and these creatures. When I asked where he got these, he replied, they land out here. He told me they had left a long time ago, but for years they came here and landed. It began in the fall of 1968. He came home from work, made his meal, and suddenly heard some noises. His cat ran around crazy. Looking outside, he sees that a craft has landed in his backyard. He went back inside, got his camera and took pictures. The ETs came out and he took pictures of them. They were Ebons. He told me, they didn't speak to me with words, but they talked to me in my head, parenthesis, telepathically. I could understand them, but they were having problems understanding me. The contact lasted from the late 60s until about 1975 or 1976 when they told him they were leaving. And they gave him these gifts. Some were star-shaped, others were like bronze statues. There were little models of things. At first I thought this was all just a setup. Honest to God, when I first got there, I thought, this can't be real. I told the OS agent from Hill, I said, is this a setup? Are these movie props? I asked the man. His name was James Sadorsky or Sadorsky, something like that. Why he was contacting us now? He informed me that he was dying and that he needed to do something with all this stuff, that he figured the Air Force might as well have it. So we sent the flag up, and the next you know there are truckloads of people coming from the NSA and CIA to review all this stuff. We actually contracted a company with a moving van to move all this stuff, packaging it in a unique manner, because they don't know if this stuff was setting off a signal. I had never thought of that until one of the technical people up in headquarters in Washington said, you know what, these things might be bugged or even radioactive. There were probably 24 items. They obviously meant something to the Ebbons, because they gave them to James, thinking that it was something meaningful. There was a bronze heart, with some calligraphy inside of it, and ceramic statues of something, maybe a god or something. There was another item that was almost like a wreath, with different symbols around it. And on the back of it they had these appendages that came out, maybe to put it on a stand or something. I could never figure it out. I only saw them the 2 times. The one time that he showed them to us, and then when we came back to package everything up. So they're up in CIA or DIA or someplace. I'm sure they've analyzed them. There were also photographs taken during the daytime of the craft, and they were as clear as you ever saw. And James took pictures inside the craft. They showed instrument panels and a huge screen with the universe or star charts or navigational charts. James had this chart. We were leaving the first time when he said, oh, I forgot to show you this. And he went into a chest and retrieved a laminated paper that had these lines going through it. And he unfolded it and said, oh, this is where they came from, only there were no references on it. I don't know what they ever figured out. I did read later that the Ebon were from Zeta Reticuli, and that was from an official source. I believe the American people are entitled to a more thorough explanation than has been given them by the Air Force. I think we owe it to the people to establish credibility regarding UFOs, and to produce the greatest possible enlightenment of the subject. President Gerald Ford Hope Testimonials, A.H. Anonymous, Boeing Aircraft Sergeant Clifford Stone, U.S. Army Don Phillips, U.S. Air Force and contractor at Lockheed Skunk Works and the CIA. Commentary from Stephen M. Greer. Early one morning, in October of 2009, I had a very lucid dream before rising. A thought, recurring and insistent, entered my mind, gently saying, let us hope, so that we may live. As this thought recurred, a number of lucid images appeared. First, I found myself in Africa, in a rural and desolate place, clearly impoverished and lacking any means of sustenance. A child, perhaps 10 years of age, was wandering through this bleak and forbidding landscape, starving, and cradling a younger dying child in his arms. And the voice was saying, let us hope, so that we may live. I wept as I saw that this and this alone. The spark of hope within the soul of this child. Propelled him forward to live. Amid the suffering and against all odds, only the driving force of hope sustained him. Then I saw my own childhood. Desperate at times and lonely, not knowing how I would survive and not knowing how to go forward. And this thought was repeating, let us hope, so that we may live. And so I saw at times that this was literally all that I possessed, the spark of hope, somewhere in the crevices of my soul, keeping me going. Even to today. Hope. Next I saw all who dwell on earth now, at this time of great change, challenge and difficulty, and this singular thought was repeating, let us hope, so that we may live. And I saw that this was the indispensable quality to which we all must hold, hope, which will carry us forward together to the fulfillment of the promise of humanity. While we may not live on hope alone, surely we cannot live without it. So throughout the coming days of trials, changes and the transformation of life on earth, we can turn within and hear, and never forget. Let us hope, so that we may live. Testimonial. A.H. is a person who has gained significant information from inside the UFO extraterrestrial groups within our government, military, and civilian companies. He has friends at the NSA, CIA, NASA, JPL, NRO, Area 51, the Air Force, Northrop, Boeing, and others. He used to work at Boeing as a surface technician. From all of the contacts that I've met, my final conclusion about this is that the reason why our government is afraid to release this information about UFOs and ETs is because of religion. This would probably destroy how we see ourselves. For example, the information that we have managed to collect regarding the face on Mars, which I know for a fact is real, would have a great impact. I have another contact at NASA, JPL, that I haven't mentioned. I can't mention too much about it because he is still working there. This person that I know is very high up in NASA. He said they know it's a face. They know that it was carved by somebody other than us. In an imaging area, they know for a fact that the face on Mars is real and that it was not made by windstorms or trick of lighting or anything like that. They know for a fact that the face on Mars was made by an extraterrestrial race that came here to Earth about 45,000 years BC. They set up civilization here on Earth and went back and forth from Mars to our planet, Earth, to give us information and to further the race that they created, which is us. This is a shock to the human populace. And I think it's the big reason why NASA and the governments, especially the United States, are refusing to release this information, because one thing will lead to another and somebody will come to the conclusion that we were created by an extraterrestrial race. This would be shocking to everybody here on Earth and this is what they are afraid of releasing. And that's my final conclusion regarding this investigation and who the aliens are. I really feel that the aliens that were on the planet Mars came here and set up our civilization as we now know it, and they created these grey extraterrestrial aliens to watch over our planet to make sure that we don't blow up their creation and their planet. Testimonial. Sergeant Clifford Stone, U.S. Army, has seen living and dead extraterrestrials himself in his official duties on an Army team that retrieved crashed ET crafts. He has been given access to black ops bases and secret access projects. I am prepared to state that I have been at locations where craft of unknown origin, that did not originate on the face of this planet, were there. I am prepared to state that while I was there, we saw living and dead bodies of entities that were not born on this planet. I am prepared to state that we had what they referred to as interfacing with those entities. I am prepared to state that they have a school to try to indoctrinate people. I never went to that school. I always refused. I am prepared to state that when I got out of the service in 1990, that they held me for 2 months so that I might better reconsider to stay in and not get out. I am prepared to state that I had orders that stated that I was supposed to get out on December 1, 1989, and that they revoked those orders. Once again, in violation of law, they held me for 2 months pending approval of my retirement, which had already been approved. The purpose of that was to try to convince me to stay in. We have contact with aliens, not originating from some foreign country, but from some other solar system. And I have been a party to that. I've worked it. I've been there. And I know some of the things we do are really, 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 really terrible. They are not hostile toward us. We are the enemy in this instance, but we are the enemy, I like to think, for the good reasons. We are concerned about what some other country might do. I have concluded that I am fighting against the clock. That I have but a short time to try to convince people that we are moving down an avenue where we are going to militarize space. Once we militarize space, we will have a whole new avenue of technology opened up to us. We want to acquire this technology. We want to make this technology part of our own technology. As a result of militarizing space, we are going to acquire new technologies and we are going to evolve new technology that is going to lead us into interstellar travel. As a direct result, we will become a threat to them unless we spiritually grow also. But I feel that if we do not grow spiritually, we are forcing the situation where the entities will eventually make themselves known. And they will make themselves known. And no power on earth can stop that from happening. The ATs will do this in order to stop us from going out into space as a threat. If this should happen, it will happen to an unsuspecting world population and that can create some very serious problems. I believe that the intelligence community had good intentions when they classified information dealing with UFOs. I believe that they asked some very serious and hard questions. What impact would it have if the peoples of the world knew that they were no longer alone in the universe, that they had intelligence that was visiting this planet? And I think that the intentions were good there. As intelligence agencies among nations, naturally you want to go ahead and acquire the technology for military application. So you want to try to keep some of that knowledge as confidential as possible by classifying it as high as you possibly can. Keeping the information open to only a small handful of people, that is, special access programs. However, I believe that while it was full of good intentions in keeping this information classified, it is, parenthesis, now, hurting people. I do not believe that any government has the right to try to make individuals who merely see UFOs look crazy. I do not believe that any government has that right, knowing that the psychology of specific individuals may lead to a tremendous amount of mental depression, ultimately leading in many, many cases to suicide or self-destruction. When we see these types of things coming about, we have an obligation to reconsider our thoughts and positions. I would suggest that we need to break down the walls of secrecy, that we must be responsible in getting the truth out. We must be responsible in how we get that truth out. And we must be truthful. This issue doesn't just deal with the United States. It is a truth that the entire world has to be informed about. And that truth is that man is not alone, that we have people from other planets, from other solar systems coming here. How many bodies have been recovered? Don't know. How many crashes have occurred in which we only got debris because the ATs came and did their recovery before we got there? Don't know, but it has happened. When they had problems, just like we send out a distress call, they send out a distress call, which is something that a lot of people don't think about. It's a question that's never asked. But here again we think of them as something intangible like that stuffed animal there. But they are living, breathing creatures as mortal as you and me. They think, they have loves, they have likes, they have dislikes, they have social culture. This is so important to try to make people understand that this is the case. I want to put the human factor back into UFOs. And when I say the human factor, I mean that these are real people. You can call them entities. You can call them creatures. But you sometimes find yourself wondering, who are the more real people, the more us? And these are things that really need to be brought out, the fact that they are just like you and me. We need to seek out the similarities, not the differences, and come to a greater understanding. Because eventually, in the not too distant future, we are going to have that final contact that is going to open new doors. And it is not a scary story. You will learn that the ATs have a perception of God. You find they have families. You find they have cultures. You find that they have likes and dislikes. You look for those things that are similar among us, not the differences. And that is the way you start on the path to truth. The problem that we have right now is that we look at them as something to talk about, something to marvel at and be amazed at. Testimonial. Don Phillips, U.S. Air Force, and contractor at Lockheed Skunk Works and the CIA, worked with Kelly Johnson at the Lockheed Skunk Works on design and construction of the U-2 and the SR-71 Blackbird. He was in the Air Force at Las Vegas Air Force Base during a major UFO event. Are these ET people hostile? Well, if they were hostile, with their weaponry, they could have destroyed us a long time ago or could have done some damage. I know that some of the technologies came from the extraterrestrial craft. And, the reason they crashed is that their guidance mechanism was interrupted by our radar and by some other equipment that we have. Even more validating for me was that one of our contract scientists for our private concern, Light City Technologies, Incorporated, worked with these technologies. He worked with a couple of those technologies while he was with a very prominent intelligence agency of the United States government. The one person that I've talked to outside of the military or the government level is Dr. Greer. And, the reason for that is because he takes the professional approach, which is more in line with the way we were in the military. Part 1, recap. The evidence and testimony supports the following. That we are indeed being visited by advanced extraterrestrial civilizations and have been for some time. That UFO/ETs represent the most classified, compartmented unacknowledged special access programs within the US and many other countries. That those projects have, as warned in 1961 by President Eisenhower, escaped legal oversight and control in the US, the UK and elsewhere. That advanced spacecraft of extraterrestrial origin, called extraterrestrial vehicles, ETVs, by some intelligence agencies, have been downed, retrieved and studied since at least the 1940s and possibly as early as the 1930s. That significant technological breakthroughs in energy generation and propulsion have resulted from the study of these objects, and from related human innovations dating as far back as the time of Nikola Tesla, and that these technologies utilize a new physics not requiring the burning of fossil fuels or ionizing radiation to generate vast amounts of energy. That classified, above top secret projects possess fully operational anti-gravity propulsion devices and new energy generation systems that, if declassified and put to peaceful uses, would empower a new human civilization without want, poverty or environmental damage. Implications for the humanity and the environment. We have identified insiders and scientists who can prove, in open congressional hearings, that we do in fact possess classified energy generation and anti-gravity propulsion systems capable of completely and permanently replacing all forms of currently used energy generation and transportation systems. These devices access the ambient electromagnetic and so-called zero-point energy state to produce vast amounts of energy without any pollution. Such systems essentially generate energy by tapping into the ever-present quantum vacuum energy state, the baseline energy from which all energy and matter is fluxing. All matter and energy is supported by this baseline energy state and it can be tapped through unique electromagnetic circuits and configurations to generate huge amounts of energy from space, time all around us. These are not perpetual motion machines nor do they violate the laws of thermodynamics, they merely tap an ambient energy field all around us to generate energy. This means that such systems do not require fuel to burn or atoms to split or fuse. They do not require central power plants, transmission lines and the related multi-trillion dollar infrastructure required to electrify and power remote areas of India, China, Africa and Latin America. These systems are site-specific. They can be set up at any place and generate needed energy. Essentially, this constitutes the definitive solution to the vast majority of environmental problems facing our world. The environmental benefits of such a discovery can hardly be overstated, but a brief list includes: the elimination of oil, coal and gas as sources of energy generation, thus the elimination of air and water pollution related to the transport and use of these fuels; oil spills, global warming, illnesses from air pollution, and acid rain can and must be eliminated; resource depletion and geopolitical tensions arising from competition for fossil fuel resources will end. Technologies already exist to scrub manufacturing effluents to zero or near zero emissions for both air and water but are considered too energy intensive, costly. That equation is dramatically changed when industries are able to tap vast amounts of free energy. There is no fuel to pay for, only the device, which is no more costly than other generators, and those systems create no pollution. Agriculture, which is currently very energy dependent and polluting, can be transformed to use clean, non-polluting sources of energy. Desertification can be reversed and world agriculture empowered by utilizing desalinization plants, which are now very energy intensive and expensive, but will become cost efficient once able to use these new, non-polluting energy systems. Air travel, trucking and intercity transportation systems will be replaced with new energy and propulsion technologies. Anti-gravity systems allow for silent above surface movement. No pollution will be generated and costs will decrease substantially since the energy expenses will be negligible. Additionally, mass transportation in urban areas can utilize these systems to provide silent, efficient intra-city movement. Noise pollution from jets, trucks and other modes of transportation will be eliminated by the use of these silent devices. Public utilities will not be needed since each home, office and factory will have a device to generate whatever energy is needed. This means ugly transmission lines that are subject to storm damage and power interruption will be a thing of the past. Underground gas pipelines, which not infrequently rupture or leak and damage earth and water resources, will not be needed at all. Nuclear power plants will be decommissioned and the technologies needed to clean such sites will be available. Classified technologies do exist to neutralize nuclear waste. We are systematically destroying our planet and us with it. We can and we must do better. These technologies exist, bringing them out would save our environment, improve our world, and add tens of trillions of dollars into the economy for everyone, not just the military industrialists. Part 2, Close Encounters 5 Human-Initiated Extraterrestrial Contact for Peace. The total number of minds in the universe is 1. Erwin Schrödinger, 1887-1961. Austrian physicist, one of the founders of quantum theory, and winner of the 1933 Nobel Prize for Physics. I certainly believe in aliens in space, and that they are indeed visiting our planet. They may not look like us, but I have very strong feelings that they have advanced beyond our mental capabilities. Senator Barry Goldwater, 1965-5 in UFO Studies, a close encounter is defined as an event where a person witnesses an unidentified flying object. Dr. J. Alan Hynek, the professor of physics at Ohio State University who was selected to direct Project Blue Book for the military, and later admitted the purpose of the venture was to debunk all legitimate sightings, came up with three classifications. An act that no doubt helped get him hired as the technical advisor on Steven Spielberg's Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Close Encounters of the First Kind, defined as visual sightings of an unidentified flying object seemingly less than 500 feet away that show an appreciable angular extension and considerable detail. Close Encounters of the Second Kind, a UFO event in which a physical effect is alleged. This can be interference in the functioning of a vehicle or electronic device, animals reacting, a physiological effect such as paralysis or heat and discomfort in the witness, or some physical trace-like impressions in the ground, scorched or otherwise affected vegetation, or a chemical trace. Close Encounters of the Third Kind, UFO encounters in which an animated creature is present. These include humanoids, robots, and humans who seem to be occupants or pilots of a UFO. Close Encounters of the Fourth Kind, defined by Jacques Vallée, Hynek's associate, as a UFO event in which witnesses experienced a transformation of their sense of reality. Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind, defined by me, S5 is actually a prototype hybrid project which has scientific research and diplomatic interspecies relations components. In this UFO event, it is humans who are initiating peaceful, bilateral contact with the ETs through conscious, voluntary and proactive cooperative communication. Monterrey, Mexico. In December of 1994, the members of XETI, Center for the Study of Extraterrestrial Intelligence, and I learned of a major wave of ET activity in the mountains outside of the metropolis of Monterrey, Mexico.